Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdeo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're going to have a discussion about the theological foundations of sex and gender. Now, the topics of sex and gender are all over the place nowadays. We see them in books, and we see them in the news. How should we think Christianly about gender and sex roles?
Excellent question, Mike. And yeah, we first want to acknowledge part of the reason this is such a crucial topic for Christians is because this is the questions of sex and gender are going to be the questions we encounter in evangelism and discipleship for the foreseeable future. I mean, this is our future, is thinking deeply and Christianly about these things. And so, yeah, we wanted to spend some time today just talking biblically about these things. And eventually we want to get into what is masculinity and what is femininity and what is marriage. Those are some of the things we have in mind for future podcasts. But we have to start all that with the question of what does it mean to be sexual beings? What does it mean to be gendered beings? And so to answer your question, how do we think Christianly, Mike, I think we have to start with going all the way back to creation and just asking the question, foundationally, what is sex, what is gender, and what does it mean to be beings who are sexed beings and gendered beings? So let's just have some. I think part of the reason that Christians get in trouble on these questions and don't have thoughtful answers to some of the questions our culture is asking is because we actually haven't reasoned about them. We haven't thought through them very well theologically. And so we want to do the theological work today to try to lay the foundations. So here's the first and most important starting point. In the beginning, God, Genesis 1:1. God is a personal being. He is a person, but he has no sex or gender. God is not male or female. And so it's crucial that we understand God is personal and yet not a sexed being. That is absolutely unique to God because as human beings, we exist as either male or female, and our maleness or femaleness is not incidental but essential to who we are. So, by the way, when we talk about categories of sex and gender, sex refers to biology and gender refers more to sociology. So sex, when scientists use the categories of sex, they're talking about are you male or female in your biological equipment. And when they talk about gender, they're talking about are you masculine or feminine in your sort of disposition and characteristics. Okay, so one is biology, one is sociology. When we read about creation in Genesis 1, what we read in Genesis 1:27 is that God made human beings in his image. So it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. What that means is neither males in isolation nor females in isolation fully manifest the image of God, but rather only in the beauty of our mutuality and differentiation do we fully reflect the image of God in the world. So what this means is Genesis 1:27 has two important ramifications for us. Number one, it means it's impossible to be a human person apart from having sexuality, apart from being male or female. Those are foundational to what it means to be human. Now, one of the books I've been reading lately is the book, What is a Person? By Christian Smith. Christian Smith is a well-respected academic sociologist at Notre Dame, and he's just trying to answer the question in sociology, what is a person? And one of the characteristics he points out is that human persons are always embodied. There's no such thing as a human person apart from a body. So though God is a person apart from a body, what it means to be human is that we are always embodied, which means we are always either male or female. And that's essential to our personhood. And so we need to embrace, first of all, that sexuality is essential to personhood and the differentiations in our sexuality, the fact that we are either male or female in our biology is crucial to what it means to be made in the image of God. This is what it means to image God fully in the world. And then as we extend now to the categories of gender, Christianly, thinking biblically from a theological framework, we would also say gender is something that is connected to, it's different from, but connected to our sexuality. In other words, to say it in the simplest possible way, males are intended to display masculine characteristics and females are intended to display feminine characteristics. And how those characteristics look varies a little bit from culture to culture, but there are foundational things that connect to our biology. So when you look at the task that God gave Adam in Genesis, it is to work the garden and to keep it, to cultivate and to guard or protect. And these things are essential to masculinity. And so we as Christians don't believe that gender is sort of up for grabs, which is what our culture honestly thinks. The reason you see a lot of pushback in the area of gender right now is because our society has embraced the idea that gender is just socially determined. And so if you feel more like a woman than a man, Dusty, then you probably should be a woman instead of a man, and that's okay because you feel that way.
Yeah, culture says why not?
Yeah, they don't see gender as inherent and as connected to biology. And so as Christians, we do see gender as connected to biology, yet distinct from it. It's not the same thing, but it is who we are biologically as male or female determines how we manifest and bear the image of God in our masculinity or our femininity. And so these two categories and understanding their essentialness to our humanness is crucial. The Christian anthropology, a Christian view of human personhood, means we are body and soul. We are a psychosomatic unity, if you want to use the sort of technical terms for it. And that what that means is we are spiritual beings who live in sexed bodies, male bodies or female bodies, and therefore that's essential to how we experience personhood. We experience ourselves as embodied beings who display either masculine or feminine, male or female characteristics. Mike, you've been doing some reading in this excellent new book that we have in front of us called Father Hunger from Douglas Wilson. He has much to say about these categories, sex, gender, identity, those things. Anything that you've encountered in his writing that's been particularly helpful in this way?
Yeah, one of the things he talks about in the first couple chapters that is super helpful is that he says to have any understanding of masculinity or femininity, we need to understand that God is neither male nor female. And how, just like you said, man apart from female cannot fully reflect the image of God, and female apart from male cannot fully reflect the image of God, and how God has set that up for a reason. Like, it's not an accident that we have these things and these distinctions and these differences. And he lays out how it's okay that we're not equal as male and females. I'm forgetting the illustration he uses right now. That's unfortunate.
As I recall, he talks about that we can be equal in dignity and worth, but it's okay that we're not equivalent in function and role. And he uses the example of a hammer and a screwdriver,
exactly.
And saying if you go out to your workbench and grab one of two hammers, that's fine because they're both made for the same thing. But if what you need to do is turn a screw and you grab a hammer, or if what you need to do is hammer a nail and you grab a screwdriver, you're not. It's okay that those two things are made for different things with different functions and different roles, and that they complement one another.
Yes.
In a good craftsman's workshop.
Yes, that is the exact illustration I was trying to remember, but I forgot.
So the reason this is really crucial, foundational stuff for us to grasp is because then what we're experiencing right now in the cultural conversation is the flattening of all gender distinctions. And so with both radical feminism and with sort of the radical homosexual movement, what both of those sort of groups of people want to do is to flatten the distinctions between gender and say anything a man can do, a woman can do. Anything a woman can do, a man can do. You can replace the man in a marital union with a woman, or the woman in a marital union with another man, and have the same functional reality. And the reason that those things have persuasive value in our culture is because the culture itself is, in a sense, disconnected from any sense of transcendence and the fact that God designed us in a certain way. And so if we're going to think Christianly about these things, we can't just have the debate at the level of homosexual marriage, or at the level of, you know, is a lesbian relationship the same as a man-woman marriage relationship? We have to go back to the question of what does it mean to be created as human beings? What does it mean to be human? How does our gender and sexuality connect to that humanness? And then therefore, what are the implications for us as we live out our identity in the world? And so these are, I really have a concern that people in our church, and really any Christians who want to engage thoughtfully in those kinds of debates and questions, have a right, biblically grounded theology of gender and sexuality, so that they can talk intelligently about what does it mean that God made us in his image, male and female, and that there is appropriate differentiation, and that differentiation implies then different roles. Mm-hmm. We are an unapologetically complementarian church, which means we do believe God has different roles in mind for men and women. And that's not a function of one is more important, one is more valuable, one is more significant. It's a function of they're intended to bear the image of God and reflect the image of God to the world and to creation in mutually complementing ways. Mm-hmm. And that requires the dynamics of partnership and community that's not flat and monolithic, but that's varied and textured and full and robust. And that's crucial to how we understand the nature of marriage and family and church and all of that stuff.
How do we engage in those conversations in a deep theological way with other people who may not be thinking on a deep theological wavelength?
Well, I think that's, your question is actually itself the answer to the question. So I think the way we want to have these conversations is to acknowledge different starting points. Mm. So when I'm talking with someone, with a homosexual friend who wants to sort of say, hey, my relationship with another person of the same sex is the same as a heterosexual marriage, I just want to say, number one, I love you, value you as a person made in the image of God. Number two, we're coming from different starting points. So let's just acknowledge that at the outset that we don't share the same foundational understanding of human personhood. But let me build out for you where my starting point begins and how it looks. Because what I think can happen then is I'm actually highly, highly convinced on this, especially after raising children, that this is just intuitive to humanity. Everybody knows boys and girls are different. Every 3-year-old knows that boys and girls are different. You know, every 3-year-old boy knows that he's a boy, and every 3-year-old girl knows that she's a girl, and that, you know, that I'm different than this other person. And so I actually think that as we build out the biblical framework, even if someone is skeptical toward the existence of God or toward the reality of the Bible, we're connecting to things that are deeply foundational to human personhood. And I think we have a chance then in that conversation to say, do you see how this understanding of what it means to be human is richer and more robust? And I think it's okay to acknowledge a different starting point, because I don't think what we're looking for is to win an argument in one conversation. But what we're trying to say is to suggest a way of understanding human beings that's actually rich and full and meaningful compared to a flattened understanding of humanity that lacks distinction. And I think actually minimizes what it means to be human in unintended ways.
Yeah, I think that's why people get so frustrated, is they're going into it trying to win an argument instead of having a conversation about it.
The other interesting thing about that is we're trying to, or one of the arguments is to try to create a diverse culture when really the opposite is happening. So we already are a diverse culture. And so if you're trying to flatten sexuality, you're actually creating a flattened culture. You know, one that's trying to be all the same is not diverse at all.
Well, the thing I want to do in those conversations, Mike, with my friends who are feminists, my friends who are homosexuals, is to challenge their assumptions, right? To ask them the questions like, don't you see how the way you're viewing gender actually flattens and minimizes any distinction between human beings? So if you're saying that a woman can be the same as a man, Don't you see how that actually dishonors masculinity? And if you're saying that a man can play the same role as a woman, don't you see how you're actually dishonoring women in saying that? I sort of want to provoke and uncover some of the baseline assumptions that are there, because it's important that people actually think about these issues. I think gender and sexuality are very foundational to humanity, and the further we drift in these areas as a culture, the more confused our future is going to be, the more disservice we're doing to the children who are growing up in a culture that's not giving them a clear vision for what it means to be a human being made male or female and displaying masculine or feminine characteristics.
So then let's get further along in that then. So we talked about how without the proper understanding of God, creating us in his image, male and female, yet he's not male or female. What's the next step? What's the next thing we need to grapple with theologically to take that deeper?
So I think the next thing, in my opinion, is embracing then our maleness or femaleness. One of the things that Douglas Wilson points out that I thought was fascinating in the very first chapter of this book, Father Hunger, is he says that fatherhood is a perpetual institution. Yeah. It will last for eternity, right? If we believe in the resurrection of the just and the unjust, there's never a time for the rest of history when you're not going to be a father. Mm. Like, you're always going to be related to the progeny that you bring into the world, and likewise for motherhood. And so these relationships are not just functional. They're foundational to life and humanity and eternity. And so part of what needs to happen is that we begin to embrace, I'm a man and not a woman. I'm a woman and not a man. Here's what that means for the life that I'm to live before God. Here's what that means about the limitations that I'm going to have, right? Like, for me, there are things that are great about me being a man, and there are blind spots that I have that I need a wife or some sisters in Christ or a mother or, you know, some females around me and alongside me to help me see and balance out. Mm-hmm. Beginning to embrace maleness and females rather than flattening those distinctions, I think embracing the beauty of that and the harmony that's created when those things begin to work in complementarity is crucial. Mm-hmm. So I want to embrace the sort of image of God reality that we are male or female. And then, so that's Genesis 1. Mm-hmm. And then I want to embrace the reality of Genesis 3, that we've also been corrupted by the fall. And so sin is pervasive in our lives and in our psyche and in our persons, and therefore the ways we live out masculinity and femininity, maleness and femaleness, are going to be corrupted and need to be redeemed. And so we begin to look at the question of what are some of the characteristic sins and flaws that men have because of the fall? What are some of the characteristic sins and flaws that women have because of the fall? And how do those things, not in a monolithic way, but in a complex way, then create categories for us to begin to do pastoral ministry and discipleship with one another? What does it mean for me to disciple men to be more godly kinds of men who fully reflect the image of God as men? Mm-hmm. What does it mean for us to disciple women in ways that fully reflect the image of God as women, and them living into, rather than resenting the role that God's given either one, or abdicating the role that God's given either one? What does it mean for us to begin to live into that, embracing the differentiation in our roles, and seeking to live that out in a way that glorifies and honors God and the society that we're in?
And then with that, what do I do with my attraction? What do I do with my feelings? And so that's why the theology of sex and gender is so appropriate and so necessary, because you have to work from that to get down to the sin-stained hearts that we have. So if I'm a male and I feel like being a female, that doesn't mean I can just embrace that, because especially if I'm subscribing to Scripture and saying this is true, well, I can't get very far into the Bible and stay that way. So what do I do with that?
Yeah, this has wide-ranging implications. We've talked a little bit in the past, Mike, about, I know you and I have, about theology of the body, and we'll probably go deeper into that in future podcasts. But if it's true that we're embodied creatures, then what we do with our bodies is an act of worship. Mm-hmm. And how we live in our bodies is worship and a means of glorifying God. And I think what you have in American Christianity especially is sort of a Gnosticism that mm-hmm. says, really, it's about my soul and my personal relationship with God and my inner communion with God. And so you have people who, to use your example, Dusty, right there, I'm a man, but I feel like a woman, to use people who struggle with transgender temptations, right? I'm a man, but I feel like a woman. And so because I feel like that, who cares what my body is? I have a right to change it.
Right.
When actually a healthy theology of the body would say, well, let's back up a second. You may feel like a woman and not a man, and that's an important thing that we want to help you walk through, but you're embodied as a creature in a male body. So what does that mean if there's a God who created you in his image? And see, that question is the one that I think Christians do a poor job of getting to, because we live in such a subjectivist culture that's very into how I feel and my inner being and my inner feelings and thoughts, but probably minimizes the reality of what does it mean that we're physical, that we inhabit physical bodies that are sexed and gendered bodies, and that come with certain equipment and certain sort of foundational ways of interacting in the world because of our physicality. So to sort of sum up what we're saying, we just want to sort of lay some foundational theological groundwork for gender and identity so that in weeks to come we can begin to flesh this out and say, what does it mean to be masculine and feminine? What does it mean to answer some of these more of these discipleship questions that are very good, Mike? But I feel like today is a little more foundational. Just let's think theologically as Christians about maleness and femaleness, and let's have a robust biblical theology of manhood and womanhood that's rooted in the creation order.
Thanks, guys. I look forward to all the other conversations we're going to have next couple weeks or so. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we're talking about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We also invite you to join the conversation by tweeting us at @CorumDeoOmaha on Twitter. We'll talk to you again next week on the Wednesday Conversation.